taking a look at your dental health now and the importance of dental health with our guest, Dr. Lowell Lackritz. Teaches in the dental hygienist program at Madison Area Technical College now. Had his own very successful practice. He's now officially retired from, but he still provides care through clinics that offer services for low-income and other high-needs patients. So that's something he does that's really an important thing for our community and for any community. And I'm hoping other dentists do the same thing. But we have Dr. Lackritz with us today. If you have a question about your dental health, I hope you'll join in with us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Dr. Lackritz, welcome back.
Oh, it's great to be back, Larry.
Great to have you. Great to have you here. You know, our dental health can have a huge impact on our overall health.
It's very true.
I'm wondering about some of the ways that that it can affect it.
Well, the most recent to-do has to do with periodontal disease, diseases of the gum tissue in people's mouths. People who have severe periodontal disease are very subject to additional medical problems. There's been a lot of research done showing that there is a connection between periodontal disease and cardiac problems, a connection between periodontal disease and early birth babies who are low in weight and early birth. Oh, yeah. And also there's a lot of different things having to do with obesity is almost a significant predictor of periodontal disease.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's been shown that people who are obese tend to get more periodontal disease than others. So it does affect the body in many ways other than just the mouth.
Are there particular dental issues that lifestyle or genetics might make us more likely to experience these problems? So overweight is one of those things.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, well, periodontal disease, there seems to be a genetic tendency toward periodontal disease. There have been people who have been documented in families where periodontal disease is more prevalent than in others.
I grew up on a farm, and we did not have water that was
fluoridated.
Fluoridated,
yeah, of course.
And so we had a lot of dental problems as a kid.
Yeah, there is fluoride in a lot of natural water supplies that that help to prevent cavities, but the level has to be such that it is effective. Many rural water supplies, Wisconsin, not so much, but in the western part of the United States, there's a lot more fluoride in water, and Texas, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. and places like that, they find
Utah, more, I think, too.
Yeah, Utah. And in fact, some places, the amount of fluoride is high enough to actually cause discoloration of teeth. That's too much.
Yeah.
But the appropriate amount will definitely prevent cavities.
Nick in Green Bay, it is your turn. Hi, Nick. Thank you for calling.
Hi. What timing for this? I just had 3 teeth pulled like 3 weeks ago.
Oh.
Lucky you.
Yeah, it hurt so bad. And last week I pulled out a stitch that was like a quarter inch long. And it was just like, I thought I had something stuck in my tooth, so I pulled it out, and here's a big stitch. It looked like a piece of knitting yarn.
Uh-huh.
I thought they were supposed to dissolve. And the other quick question I got for you is, one of the teeth was like really infected severely. He pulled it out, and he was kind of impressed on how infected it was. And now my blood sugar dropped like a rock. I was diagnosed with diabetes about 5 years ago after I broke this, and now that the tooth is out, my sugar's like completely normal. Is that pretty usual?
Well, it's known that people who are diabetic are more subject to infection, and actually more subject to periodontal disease as well. We see it a lot in people who are diabetic, particularly uncontrolled diabetics, obviously. But the fact that you had an infection and it was cleared up would definitely probably have an effect on your blood sugar. There's no question about
it. No question.
And with regard to that stitch, most surgeons now and most dentists use stitches that do dissolve, but some dissolve at different rates. So some maybe last longer than others, and that's why you found one, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later.
Oh, there you go. Thanks, Nick, for calling. Appreciate it. Jessica in River Falls, we're on to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes. My question is, I have a little bit of periodontal disease going on too, a little bit of bleeding with my gums, and I do both flossing daily, twice a day, and water pick twice a day. It has improved, but I'm wondering if a little bit of a steroid cream on the dental floss would improve things.
Not really. Steroids are designed to reduce inflammation. They don't have any. Yeah, they don't have anything to do with infection whatsoever. Okay. I think what you're doing is appropriate. You're flossing twice a day. You're using your water pick, and brushing thoroughly. I think if you continue that, you'll keep your periodontal disease well under control. And I would suggest visiting the dentist if you do have a periodontal problem, going back to the office about every 90 days to get your teeth cleaned and the material
removed.
To get
it under control.
To get it under control, because we find that it takes about 90 days for the plaque to reform and start producing bacteria and the byproducts of bacterial action which cause the periodontal disease. So if you get your teeth cleaned every 90 days, you could keep that pretty much under control.
So is periodontal disease something that you manage and not get rid of?
Generally speaking, yes. There are rare instances where it is not manageable and it seems to go on with regardless of what the patient tries to do or the dentist tries to do, but it's extremely rare. So most people who have various stages of periodontal disease, until it gets extremely advanced, it's very controllable.
Okay. So this is just a control. I continue doing what I'm doing for
Absolutely.
The rest of my life.
Pretty
okay.
much.
Yep. All righty. I thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. If you have a dental question, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Karen in Cottage Grove was talking about diabetes a couple minutes ago. She had a sort of a specific health question. And that related to dental implants. If you have diabetes, will that affect whether or not you can have dental implants?
It shouldn't have any effect unless the person is an uncontrolled diabetic.
Oh.
I think if insulin production and sugar, blood sugar is well under control, there should be no problem with implants whatsoever. It's only the person who has uncontrolled diabetes that's really subject to problems when they have any kind of dental surgery or an implant. Absolutely is obviously dental surgery. You have to insert this into the bone of the jaw through the gums, and so any form of surgery like that is considered a no-no for an uncontrolled diabetic.
Okay, more callers online here. John in Madison, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I got a question. I had a root canal done on one of my front teeth, quite a few years back. And in the last year now, the tooth has turned real dark brown.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And does that...
Well, that's not unusual. What the problem is there is when the root canal is done, there may be a little bit of the tooth nerve or the pulp still remaining within the tooth. And this is normal tissue under normal circumstances, but once the pulp dies, this tissue breaks down. And there are byproducts of tissue breakdown that will actually stain the tooth from the inside out. However, these can be whitened. There are bleaching procedures that you can use to whiten and rewhiten a tooth that has turned dark from a root canal. So I would discuss this with your dentist, and I'm sure if he doesn't do this procedure, he can probably send you to somebody who does.
Oh, great, because mm-hmm. it does make a difference when you smile.
It creates a real cosmetic problem, but it's something that can be handled.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, John. Charlotte in Grays Lake, hello to you.
I'm good. So I have a dentist in Evanston, Illinois here, and she does some homeopathy, and she suggests that I use essential oils of myrrh and tea tree oil to help control my gum disease. And you can put that in your water pick, or I put it actually on my powdered toothpaste. So I'm using that in addition to anything else that I can come up with to support my gums.
Yeah, those probably have a slight disinfecting effect. And you could probably get the same effect from a non-alcoholic mouthwash, of which there are many on the market. You can put some of that in your water pick. But generally speaking, the proper home care, as we discussed with the previous patient, using dental floss on a regular basis, brushing properly, this is all geared to controlling the periodontal disease. But anything that, if it works for you, great.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
You know, that's what counts. And right. it may not work for everybody, but if,
right.
but if it works for you, that's great.
Right, and I like the flavor. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Charlotte. Thank you for calling.
You know, speaking of flavor, I personally happen to like a brand of toothpaste that sells for 99 cents a tube. You know?
Wow.
But it's regular toothpaste, but, it's I won't name the brand because that's not...
Everybody's going to want to know.
Okay, it's Pepsodent. But I happen to like that flavor, so that's what I use.
Wow. Dan in Three Lakes. Hi, thank you for calling.
I've been quoted the prices of an implant at $3,300 in several different places, and all of a sudden I see that people are advertising in New York City and in Milwaukee to do implants for $1,600. What's up with this?
Okay, well, you have to determine whether or not that fee not only includes the implant itself, but the rebuilding of the tooth into a tooth shape, a crown that goes on top of the implant. If you're looking at the total price, unfortunately, it can get to over $3,000 because most people who are doing implants, the implant is about $1,500, and then the crown itself would be anywhere between $1,000 and $1,200 or $1,300. So you're pushing it there, but you have to check to make sure that it includes the complete procedures, not just the implant itself.
Yeah, so the implant, and so it's, I guess you could... advertise.
Right.
We'll do an implant for $1,600, but...
Now, if they're doing the implant and the crown for $1,600, I guess that would be a bargain. That would be a bargain. But then again, what I would suggest is get references from an office like that. Talk to some of the... See if they'll give you names of patients who are satisfied clients. Because there are a lot of cut-rate things going on in the world that... are not up to standard, so you got to be a little careful.
Yeah, and thanks again for calling. Our guest today, Lowell Lakritz, he teaches in the dental hygienist program at Madison Area Technical College, and we're really glad to have him with us, and certainly you can join in with your questions and comments for him here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our teeth, mouth, and gums get quite a workout every day, but other than a brush and maybe floss a few times a day, we often don't give them the attention they deserve. But what's going on in our mouths can have a huge impact on our overall health. Hi, Larry Mueller here. So glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. Dr. Lowell Lakritz has some great advice to share about dental health. We'll also share what options are out there for free or low-cost dental services, or where you or someone else you know can find them. And, of course, he's happy to answer your questions when you call to join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Or go to our Facebook page to post your comments and questions there. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. And if you click like while you're there, we'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. We'll be back with Dr. Lakritz right after the news. Great to have a beautiful smile, but there are a lot of other reasons to keep your gums and teeth happy, too. And we're lucky to have Dr. Lowell Lakritz with us. He comes by a few times a year to share his experiences with us. He teaches in the dental hygienist program at Madison Area Technical College. And officially retired from practice, but he still provides care through clinics that serve low-income and other high-needs patients. So it's great to have him back. Certainly, if you have a question or comment for him, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page, post there at the Larry Mueller Show. Richard in Lake Geneva has been waiting a while, so let's go there. Hi, Richard. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Thanks a lot. This is Chef Richard. I wanted to make a few comments. First of all, my stepfather, Rudy DePalma, which had passed, he at Loyola Medical Center was the one that put fluoride with a group of people, you know, and they were going to dental school, did this experiment, and they added the fluoride to the water, the city water, and they noticed an improvement over time, and thus, you know, letting people know that well water, you know, yeah, it's good for you, but it doesn't have enough fluoride. So that's when they started, back in the 50s and 60s, that's when they started putting the fluoride in the water. So that's one of the benefits of keeping your mouth, you know, maintaining your hygiene and your mouth, you know, and bleeding gums. And also, you know, the product they have today, like ACT, Total Care, anti-cavity fluoride rinse, those things, after you brush and floss, you vigorously, you know, put that in your mouth and vigorously shake it around in your mouth, slush it around for at least a minimum of 2 minutes, and that will definitely help your mouth.
Well, you know, Richard, most dental offices today are very, very strong in preventive care and recommend all of the things you've talked about. And it is true, the earliest use of fluoride in a urban water supply was in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in the early 50s. And within 2 years, they noticed a huge reduction in the number of cavities in children. In Milwaukee, 1954, same thing. And it's been in civic water supplies ever since and has saved literally billions of dollars in dental care for the general public. Billions and billions.
That's wonderful. Thank you again, Richard, for calling. Appreciate your call very much. I want to give Nancy in Wauwega a chance to join us. Nancy, hello to you.
Hi there. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Okay. My daughter had a tooth pulled, and she is on a limited budget, and she was wondering if there was anything out there for clinical trials that she could, like, get into so it would be a lesser cost for her.
Well, it depends. There are low-cost dental clinics that function in the public sector, but many of them don't do sophisticated type of dentistry such as implants or fancy crown and bridge and cosmetic type dentistry. They confine their efforts mostly to basic dental care, preventive care, periodontal disease, and cavities. So it's very difficult to find very sophisticated dental care in a situation like that. And as you may have heard earlier in the program, the person who talked about getting an implant, and it was coming over $3,000. And unfortunately, that's the circumstances we're dealing with.
Yeah, it's too bad.
So I don't have a clear answer for you.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you anyway.
I'm sorry.
Thanks a lot for calling. And you know, that gives us the opportunity, though, to talk a little bit about low-cost clinics. And, you know, there is some help out there for people.
Oh, yes. It's getting more and more prevalent. You know, 10, 12, 15 years ago, literally someone, a special needs person or someone of greater need, low income, there was no place they could go to get low-cost dentistry done. But now there are clinics throughout the state of Wisconsin and even, you know, nationally, which are operated a lot by public service organizations, dental societies, such as that. And basically, I know that the Wisconsin Dental Association keeps a list of these organizations statewide, so that someone who is in a tough situation and needs dental care, whether it be emergency or general type dental care, can generally get into one of these clinics someplace within the state and get their needs taken care of at either low cost or no cost.
Yeah, and Judith has posted up on my Facebook page a link to those clinics that are available throughout the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
There's a link on my Facebook page, so I hope that if you are interested in looking for one of those clinics, you will take a look at the Facebook page, and there could well be one in your area or near you.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Thomas in Milwaukee. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for the call. Quick question regarding Novocaine or having your teeth numbed. I just have a question as far as in the past I've noticed that, you know, when I would get my teeth numbed, it would seem that your heart rate increases some. And, you know, I asked a dentist about that, and he said that there's, you know, there's something in the actual numbing agent that causes that. I think you said adrenaline, if I'm not mistaken. But the question I have are there different types of
absolutely. Depending on what type of procedure is being done, what you're referring to is added to a dental anesthetic is a substance known as a vasoconstrictor. What it does is it shuts down the little blood vessels in the area so that the local anesthetic will sit there longer and stay numb longer. But there are local anesthetics that don't have vasoconstrictors, so that if the procedure that the dentist is doing is a short one, say it's a little filling that only is going to take a half an hour, He can use one of these non-vasoconstrictor local anesthetics, which will then wear off in about an hour to an hour and a half. However, if you're having a longer procedure, such as maybe a crown or a cap of some sort, which might take an hour and a half to do in a dental chair, he'll give you something with a vasoconstrictor in it. And generally speaking, there are several types of vasoconstrictors which are used, and some of them do have effect on heart rate. And adrenaline is one of them, and that's fairly common.
You sound very knowledgeable, and I appreciate that. The problem I'm having now is I had an accident just here recently. I was struck by lightning, actually, and my sensitivity to pain has been, you know, increased dramatically. It's changed from what it used to be.
Uh-huh.
I notice now that when I have dental work done and I do get a shot, I can still feel the pain, and they've given me more and given me more to the point where it kind of concerns me. Am I getting too much? Because I can still feel, you know, the pain, and yet, you know, I've had a dentist comment that, you know, you shouldn't be able to feel anything, you know, at this point. So I'm just wondering if maybe I'm not getting the right, you know, the right.
Well, sometimes in extreme situations such as yours, changing the type of local anesthetic might be effective, because there are different types on the market. Some of them are more effective for certain situations than others. So you might discuss that with the dentist, perhaps trying a different type of local anesthetic.
Okay.
By the way, Novocaine is no longer used. It's a common term. Everybody says, oh, I had a shot of Novocaine.
Sure.
But the drug Novocaine is probably not been used for 40 years.
Is that right?
You're right.
What is it called now?
Well, there's all kinds. There's Mepivacaine. There's all different types of local anesthetics. But Novocaine kind of went out of use, because actually what it was the, in chemistry terms, it was the stereoisomer of cocaine.
Okay.
Ah. They took the cocaine molecule, turned it around, and made Novocaine. And the problem with it is, when you got a shot of Novocaine, it took like forever to take effect. And once it took effect, it lasted forever. So, you know, people would walk around with a numb jaw for 24 hours after a shot of Novocaine. And I know this for a fact, because I'm old enough that we used some Novocaine drugs when I was in dental school. And it was really a pain to use this stuff, too. But that's what they gave us, because dental students take a long time to do their stuff. And so they wanted the patient to stay numb for a long time. So they used the Novocaine an anesthetic that had some Novocaine in it. But it's out of use now. They don't use it anymore.
Is gas a good option, or I've never had it?
Yes, actually, it does. You could. There's several ways of dealing with that. Nitrous oxide gas, or so-called laughing gas, is a great. It's a great sedative. Actually, it doesn't really stop the pain, but used in conjunction with a local anesthetic, what the laughing gas does, it makes you not care. You know, so you may still feel it, but you won't care. And so that is a good alternative sometime for someone like yourself, which may have a real sensitivity.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll try that option. Oh,
yeah,
I do.
You can.
Thanks a lot for calling. Well, you know, that was a great call, because I knew...
Little anecdote there.
I knew nothing about this, because everybody says a shot of Novocaine.
Yeah, it's like you know, gelatin dessert. Everybody says it's Jell-O,
yeah.
You know, but there are other brands. So it's just a common term.
Kathy in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. Hi. Yes, I had a question. I recently, probably within the last month, I had some soreness in my upper gum and the front teeth. Well, then when I looked, I had back away from there, I had a big ball up in the gum area. Okay, it wasn't really sore. I did go to the dentist, obviously, to, you know, see what was going on with that. And they said that was an abscess. That was actually, when they did the x-ray, it was actually in a tooth that had a root canal. And I thought, that's really odd.
Well.
But you know, and now, and he gave me an antibiotic. I went through that, and the ball comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have to go and have that pulled, according to the dentist. But I keep getting little mouth sores, and I'm concerned that it's more than a abscess.
Well, if it swells up into a little ball, as you said,
yes.
Generally speaking, that is indicative of an abscess tooth.
Uh-huh.
And if it's one that has a root canal, unfortunately, you know, nothing that we do as practitioners is 100% perfect. And statistically, you get about 1.5 to 2% of properly executed root canals will fail, regardless of how meticulous the dentist is in doing it. So the alternatives to that is, as you were told, you can have the tooth removed, or sometimes the root canal can be redone and the tooth can be saved. So it's a matter of choice. Obviously, there may be a wide financial difference between having a tooth extracted and a root canal be redone, but you have to judge how much you value that tooth, whether you want to go through that expense or not. But root canal specialists, who are called endodontists,
mm-hmm.
are very good at redoing root canals, and they have a lot of experience in this, but their fees are fairly stiff. But if you want to save your tooth, it is a possibility.
Right. And would it cause other sore, you know, in the mouth in different areas? That's what I'm concerned, because I've never really had little, these are not major pains, but, you know, like little sores.
Little canker sores?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not likely that is caused by the infected root canal.
Really?
It would be, generally speaking, there's a viral connection to canker sores. It's a strange thing, because they've never really been able to isolate viruses from canker sores, but the medical determination is that it's probably a virus that's responsible. And there are ways of treating them, you know, and getting rid of the discomfort that they cause. You could discuss that with your dentist as well.
Yeah, I just wondered if they were related, and how come, you know, just a coincidence. I
think it's a coincidence. Yes, okay. That would be my opinion.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
No problem.
Thanks for calling. And Stanley in West Allis. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, good afternoon. I've been listening to the radio for many years, and every once in a while, Dr. Lakritz would be on, and I always wanted to ask him a simple question.
Uh-huh. Shoot.
when I brush my teeth, I put my toothpaste on, and then I sprinkle some baking soda on my on the brush, and I use that. And I, when we were kids and we lived on a farm, we didn't have a lot of money, and sometimes that's what we would use, would be baking soda. And I wondered if it has any disinfectant to it, or is it just useless using it?
Well,
it does make a peck.
What it does is it reduces the amount of acidity in the mouth, and the acids that are produced by the bacteria in the mouth tend to very slowly eat away at the enamel and cause cavities. So by using baking soda, and it was a common dentifrice, a common dental powder, years ago,
uh-huh.
and there's no harm in adding it to it. In fact, there are some toothpaste on the market that contain that, and so basically,
I've tried them, and it doesn't seem like there's very much in there.
Yeah, what you're doing is certainly harmless, and it may be doing you some good.
Yeah, I was hoping
mm-hmm.
that it was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much.
Jeff, thanks for calling. Marcia in McHenry County, Illinois. Hi.
Hi, this kind of goes along with what the last gentleman was talking about. I have a basic question about toothpaste.
Okay.
You go to the store, and there's the basic kind you can buy, and then there's the tartar control you can buy, and then there's all these fancy whiteners and brighteners. Do those things really work, or am I just wasting my money on those?
Well, there is some benefit to them. The whitening type toothpastes will not particularly whiten the enamel of your teeth, but they are effective in removing stain substances from the surface of the tooth that can be caused by coffee, tea, chocolate, things like that. They will, if there's any surface discoloration, these whitening toothpaste will help to remove that. Toothpaste containing fluoride are very valuable for cavity control. But there are so many on the market, and it's a very competitive business, so they keep changing them and upgrading them, and millions and millions of dollars is spent on advertising for these things. But I don't know if you heard me earlier in the program. I talked about a very inexpensive toothpaste that I just like because it tastes good. And a lot of the toothpastes are very strong. They're very minty, and people are turned off by that. So my recommendation is use a fluoride toothpaste. If you want to use a whitening toothpaste, it will help to remove surface stains from the teeth. But other than that, they're pretty much all alike.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And an email from Chris in Trempealeau. About a month ago, I went camping and had a piece of one of my front teeth come loose and break off, which happened to me about 20 years ago as well. As a matter of fact, doesn't cause any pain, and you can't tell from the outside. How long can I wait before I go to have anything done about it?
Well, it's probably a good idea to probably go to your dentist and maybe just have him polish it off and smooth it so that you don't have any rough edge that may continue to chip off if, by some reason. Other than that, there's really no reason. If it's not a cosmetic problem, that's all I would do.
Yeah. And a Facebook question from Ann, who's wondered, what is the substance in coffee and tea that causes staining on teeth?
Tannin is in tea, and coffee just has a lot of different things. If you look up the contents of coffee, there's something like 100 different chemicals in coffee or substances in coffee that give it its flavor and its, you know, texture and whatever. But it's just, they're dark colored, and they're in tea. It's a tannin substance, tannic acid basically, and there's probably some of that in coffee too.
And email from Gary in Rhinelander is wondering if sensitivity in teeth becomes more common as you age. He's 70, going on 73, and just this past year, several of his teeth suddenly became more sensitive.
Yes, it's quite possible, because as we age, the gum tissue shrinks a little bit away from the tooth and exposes part of the tooth root, which normally would be below the gum line. So if the gum tissue shrinks a little bit, it will expose that root, which contains little nerve endings, and that's why they become sensitive. There are toothpastes on the market that you can get for tooth sensitivity, and they work quite well, although they take a little while to take effect, usually a couple, 3 weeks. And Sensodyne is one, and there's a couple others, but they do work well for tooth sensitivity. Also, your dentist probably has substances in his office which he can paint on those exposed areas and desensitize them. So it's a matter of choice. I usually recommend people just go to the pharmacy or the supermarket and buy some desensitizing toothpaste.
Our guest, Dr. Lowell Lackritz, today, who's been a guest on our program for many, many years. It's always great to have him along. Wanted to take a couple of minutes at the end of the show today to talk about a very good friend of mine, and probably a good friend of yours if you've listened to Wisconsin Public Radio for a long time. Jim Packard, yesterday afternoon, died in New York City, and he had had some heart issues, and he hasn't been really well for quite a long period of time, but, you know, he still loved being on the air, and he still loved doing the radio work with Michael Feldman, of course, on What Do You Know. He had retired from this program after 25 or so years together. But yesterday afternoon, he passed on. He was out in New York, as a matter of fact, because he was hosting or doing his job with Michael Feldman on What Do You Know, and they were on the road, and so that was his last on-air program, and as everybody said, he sounded just great on that last show, and he just became a little more ill while he was out there and was admitted to a hospital, and then it looked like he might be coming home this past Thursday. But he just suddenly took a turn for the worse and passed away yesterday afternoon at around 5:15 our time, if I'm not mistaken. And I am actually, his wife Deb is out in New York now. And I felt a little buzzing on my out of my phone, and I see I've got a phone call from her that I'll be taking right after this program is over. But he was my producer for about 25 years. We shared an office together. We played golf together. We drank some beer together once in a while, although he kind of liked wine, I think, a little better than he liked beer. But he was always a real professional. He always got the right guest. When we had a topic, he was the guy who would find the right guest. And when he hosted the program, he always made the guests feel at home and welcome, and he always had the right questions. He always had the right questions to ask of the guests, questions that you and I would want to hear. And so it was real regret that I have to tell you today that he passed on. We have set up a tribute page to Jim, and thanks to Jeff Potter and all the people who worked on this, there's a tribute page that is now set up. It's linked at the top of WPR.org. We encourage you to share your memories of Jim there or on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We have that Facebook posted and ready to go when you start with a link to the retirement show that we did as well with him. So we'll talk more about it. I had to wait to the end because I wasn't sure I'd be able to get through the whole thing. Thanks to Jim, and thanks to you for listening.